welcome to
For the Love of Dogs with Dennis Wolf.
Hey, good morning, everybody. I bet everybody wants to change places with me right now because I am in the proverbial box of puppies. So if you do hear something that sounds like a little squeak or a little whine, it is not a husband and it is not a child. It is a puppy, which, listen, that's the best way to go anyway. Well, today, you know, it's funny. I have so many questions from people, and we have had a few weeks off with, you know, summer and all the things starting back. But you know what? Something that you just never take a vacation from? Good pet care. And one of the things that I want to go over today is I've had so many calls from people who truly do not know what's available out there for their pets. So, for instance, I had two calls remembering I'm not a veterinarian. I'm a behaviorist. I'm not a board-certified veterinary practitioner. But I know things that maybe sometimes others don't know, and the reason is because most people don't want to call up, whether it's poison control or they don't want to call up a particular person or place because they don't want to spend money. Now, I'm going to just tell you something. I love pet insurance. I don't love all of them, but I love pet insurance because this week I had three separate people, two of them whose pets absolutely would not have been alive today if they hadn't called me. Now, you got to think about if your child is sick or if your child just isn't acting right. You know, you might say, all right, let me see. Maybe it's a fever. Let me wait, you know, a day. Let me wait a couple days. But with animals, because they can't tell you when they've got a problem, they can't do anything other than maybe not eat or, you know, lay down a little too much or not play. So you have to be very, very in tune and adept at looking at what the dog or cat is telling you without actually using words. To me, that's the most important thing in the world, is understanding that unspoken, unwritten language that animals give us that we just don't either listen to or we don't understand, but there's something here that we have to start paying attention to as good pet owners. For instance, one of the calls was from a young lady who has one of our service dogs, and the dog has been super healthy for, you know, about 5 years since she got the dog, maybe 6 years. But she reached out to me and she said, you know, my dog just isn't the same. I can't put my finger on it. I can't tell you exactly what it is that's wrong or different, but it's noticeable. So we started going through some, you know, different diagnostics. So is the dog eating? Well, yeah, you know, she's eating. Sometimes she's skipping a meal, but, you know, she's eating sometimes. Well, is she drinking? Is she dehydrated? Yeah, she's drinking a lot, kind of more than normal. Okay. Then she said to me something. She said, but, you know, she hasn't been right for a couple of weeks. All right. When you say to yourself, my pet hasn't been okay or himself in a couple of weeks, then we look for, is there a behavioral reason? Has somebody passed? Have you lost another pet in that interim? Has something else happened? Has something transpired that changes the way your pet is in that moment? Now, it's certainly very possible that, you know, the animal could just, you know, be getting a little older, and that's certainly something we always look at. But in this case, it just didn't seem that way. This is an active, you know, not hyper, but an active dog who pretty much is the same every single day and is a service dog and a very well-behaved, well-trained service dog from us. So I know when we give out a dog to be a service dog for a child, a veteran, whomever, we do all kinds of health checks on those dogs. We want to make sure not only is that dog trained properly and taught properly to be the best service dog available, but we know their temperaments. We know them. We've had them for upward of sometimes even 2 years of actual training. So even years later, we know what normal is for that dog or that pet. Now, in this case, she doesn't drive. The young lady doesn't drive. She had no way of getting anywhere And it wasn't urgent. The dog wasn't constantly vomiting. The dog, you know, hadn't been, you know, acting so unusually. But it was just that little something's off. Those people who have that something off, please listen to them. Because altogether, I'm telling you, if I could figure a way to let people know that the something a little off is what's going to save your pet's life. If you're the kind of owner who doesn't notice when your dog hasn't eaten for 3 days or hasn't had anything to drink or has diarrhea because you don't even check the yard or you're not a hands-on owner, you're probably not going to be listening to this show. I want the neurotic, yeah, basically Jewish mothers out there who say, you know, I noticed something off. Let me tell you something. Children and animals, you don't often get a big like, oh my gosh, look, the child is walking around, walking into walls, or the child is having seizures. You don't often get those moments. Thankfully, most people never see them. But if you're one of those people who can kind of tell when your pet has a problem and you almost like look at it as if, well, this is very, very important because my pet usually wouldn't be engaging in this behavior. For instance, my pet seems a little quiet. You know, if your animal has an issue and all of a sudden you notice, you know, there's just something off, that's a time for you as an owner, for you as a person to say, you know what, I'm going to trust my gut feeling. I'm going to trust what I know to be true, that I know this animal really, really well, and I'm going to go spend the money to go to the emergency room or to my vet or contact someone who's in the veterinary field who at least maybe won't give you vet care, but somebody who has seen a lot more than you have. If I had a dollar for every person through my life who said, well, you know, I didn't think it was a problem, or I didn't notice that, or, you know, well, I didn't think it was important. Well, the key is, it doesn't matter what you think is important. If it's enough, like with behavior, if somebody tells me, well, I wasn't sure, it seemed a little off, but I figured it was okay. When you get to that feeling of, you know, the feeling of there could be something wrong, you're probably right. And isn't it better to go to a really good veterinary practice who can maybe run some blood work, run some diagnostics, which brings me into pet insurance. I'm not going to go into it. I have a company I use. I don't get paid. I don't get sponsored by any pet insurance company. But I will tell you something. Check out these pet insurance companies and get yourself covered. I've had probably about $500,000 of my pets through the last probably 5 or 6 years, $500,000 covered. And what I love about the company that I use is that when I do have an issue, I can call them up and they will just, you know, pre-authorize it, which is amazing. And there's only one that I know of that does that. And I love that because I can go in, not have to go stick a $10,000 surgery onto a credit card, or worse yet, if people don't even have a credit limit that can cover that, or care credit or something like that, you are now making a financial choice about euthanizing or treating your pet versus doing everything in your power to give that pet whatever it needs in that moment. Well, fortunately, the young lady that we're talking about had pet insurance. Now, she didn't have the one I have, so she didn't have the pre-authorization on that. But she did have the pet insurance, so she at least knew that if she could get somebody to cover for her as far as, you know, for the care for that day, she would be okay. So that's a good thing. But, you know, I wouldn't have even had to put that out. I would have had my insurance company covering. But let's just go back for a minute. She called me and she said, you know, my dog just, I don't know, I can't put my finger on it. I just feel like she's just not right. She's not doing what she normally does. And there's just something off. Now, how many of you are going to say, well, I've had dogs my whole life. I would know what it was. All right. That's my favorite expression for my patients, their owners, is I've had dogs my whole life. Okay. So you've had, let's say, 4 dogs through your life, 3 dogs, 6 dogs. That is not having dogs your whole life. That means that there was a dog or 2 dogs or even 3 dogs there for a good part of your life. Now, it doesn't mean you trained them. It doesn't mean you were responsible for their primary care. It just means you were living around animals prior, which is a good start. But the fact that something hasn't happened in the past, like you'll see these in financial investment firms, past performance is no guarantee of future results. I love that phrase so much because that's exactly it. Just because you've had dogs your whole life doesn't mean you've had a dog who stopped eating or stopped drinking or had a foreign body or had bloat or gastric torsion or had something else. Now, I can say that I've had dogs my whole life, but I have maybe 20 pet dogs. You know, they're all show dogs and all, but at any given time, plus another 40 to 50 in training to be service dogs. So I have maybe 60 to 70 dogs at my different facilities who I see on a daily or very regular basis, or did see on a daily basis and now see on, let's say, a biweekly or a monthly basis. So when I say I've had dogs my whole life, I've had lots of dogs for lots of years. So I'm in a different category than most of you guys are. So don't assume past performance is no guarantee of future results. Remember, don't assume that because you have had dogs, oh, well, my dog had gas once and he was fine after a few days. That could be the difference because you're ignorant or you're just feeling like it's okay. That could be the difference between your pet living and dying. Could be the difference between your pet needing a surgery and not needing a surgery. It could be the difference between your pet having a raging infection that is going to require severe long-term care or hospitalization and being okay with a little antibiotic. So you have to remember, animals cannot use words to tell us. Now, I know I can look at an animal that I've never met and say, yep, this is what's wrong with that pet. Or I can hear it like I did with this young lady. I can hear that there's an issue. When you hear there's an issue, and if you believe that there might be something, even though you've had dogs your whole life, take your pet to a good veterinarian. And I say good veterinarian, just like anything, there are fantastic veterinarians who know everything and seemingly just, I mean, they're just like magicians where they know what's going on. I'm a very, very good diagnostician. Not a veterinarian, but I'm a good diagnostician because of the volume of animals that I get phone calls between this show for the last, 15 years, between the number of people I've helped, you know, tens of thousands through the years from all different walks of life, all different countries, all different types of people, types of animals, including horses, cats, dogs, rabbits, you name it. So when I say something or when your veterinarian who's been in practice for 20 years says something, that's different than your friend or, you know, going on Facebook or social media and saying, oh, what do you people all think about the problem I'm having with my pet? Well, gee, that's kind of scary because those people don't know anything. And a veterinarian, a licensed veterinarian, is not going to tell you what could be wrong with your pet because if they are wrong and they give you medical advice without having seen your pet, they can lose their veterinary license. So what does that leave us looking at? It leaves us looking at people who have had dogs their whole lives giving you advice when I wouldn't take that advice if they paid me. Start looking today. Start looking at pet health insurance, good ones. Ask questions. You don't want a financial euthanasia. Okay. The other thing is scope out, not, you know, when you need it, but scope out good emergency vets near you. Don't look at the one that happens to be like, oh, this one, look, oh, it's got a 2.8 rating, star rating, like some of them do, because they're very expensive, which you can understand. But make sure that the people there who are practicing are board certified in emergency or critical care. Make sure that they have board certified internal medicine, board certified neurologist, board certified cardiologist, board certified in everything, because those are the people who didn't skate away and say, wow, I made it through 4 years of vet school, which is hard enough to do for a lot of people. But they also went for an additional 3 years of training and residency. So you're talking about people who, instead of just doing general practice, spent another 3 years and had to learn a specialty. Those are the people you want to know, where are they? So, for instance, the practice where I am, all of our people are board certified. All of our veterinarians in our emergency room are all board certified. They've gone that extra mile. Our vet techs are licensed. Go ask your local veterinarian if they employ licensed vet techs, or if they just have, you know, the 15-year-old kid who's there, who's doing whatever. So you have to really do your due diligence beforehand. Now, let's come back to the story that I started the top of the hour with. The dog that's a service dog that the young lady's had 5 or 6 years, and she called me. I just don't feel like everything's right. And so I started asking questions. And these are good questions for you as well. They're not veterinary questions, but these are owner questions that anybody, rather than just talking out of whatever hole the voice comes out or the air comes out, actually think with their brains and ask questions and use their mouths and their brains. Now, my first question to her was, how long has this been happening? How long has this been going on? She said, well, you know, she hasn't really been right for a couple of weeks. Ah, now what's your next question? Is she having any kind of episodes? Does it seem like she's having a seizure or a stroke or anything like that? That's one of the questions, maybe not my first, but it's one of them. No, she seems okay. All right. Has she been eating and drinking normally? Well, not really. Ah, so now it could be maybe a gastro issue. So let's look at that. So that's what she said to me. She said, not really. So I said, so if she eats, does she ever vomit it up? Or if she drinks water, does she vomit it up? Says, not all the time, but sometimes. Ah, okay. This brings us to our next thing. When she vomits, is it just in the morning? Is it like green bile when she's eating grass? Or is it throughout the day? Is there any regularity to it? Well, not really any regularity to it. Okay. Because if it happens every morning and she's eating grass every single morning and vomiting up bile, it can mean the behavioral issue as well as a physiological issue, because it could mean that the dog is anxious. A lot of dogs with behavioral issues and anxiety in the morning when the sun comes up, they realize, oops, I've got another day of work I got to do taking care of this family who just doesn't get it. These humans, they're tough. And so that is one of the things that it could be. But if it's happening kind of irregularly and very sporadically, then let's look at some maybe physiological issues. The next question I asked her was, when the dog is eating, do you think she could have ingested a foreign body or pieces of something? And she said, well, you know, I do have 3 little siblings under 7. Okay. So now, did one of the kids feed the dog something? Or do you have a dog who's one of those, I'll eat anything, including the remote, if it smells like buffalo chicken wings, or if it smells like something else? So, well, we have little kids there, which is going to lead me to the next part. Have the kids given her anything? Well, you know, I don't know. I keep a close eye on them, but I don't know because they're kids. I'm not sure. All right. When she vomits up, does she go back to playing or does she still seem kind of lethargic? Well, you know, there's not a regular pattern to it. When you start answering those questions as, I can't put my finger on it, but there's been an issue, get your dog to a really good vet practice. Now, it's fine if you have a great vet, your local, you know, veterinarian, that is totally fine. I'm not telling you to go run out and, you know, go spend tons and tons of money on, you know, vet diagnostics. But I'm also telling you, When your dog has an issue or your cat has an issue, waiting is not an option. And if you're already at a couple of days, a couple of weeks, you just say, wow, you know, my dog has vomited. Well, if the dog vomits once or twice, that's one thing. If your dog has been vomiting, you know, 5 times a day for the last 2 days, yeah, you should have had, at the end of that first day, you should have had that dog there. What's the worst thing that's going to happen? The vet's going to give you a little Serenity injection and maybe give you some medication and say, here we go. And, you know, let me know how it looks. But dogs becoming painful, dogs having a change in their behavior where you have a very sweet dog who now you go to touch him or your child goes to touch the dog and all of a sudden the dog is reacting. It can be from pain. So you have to be able to be a good diagnostician and you have to figure out what's wrong with the picture, but the picture isn't talking to you. You have to be starting to look at things. What I tell people to do is in this great day and age with video all over the place, video your dog, video the dog walking, video the dog playing, little 15-second snippets, keep it on your phone. Write a little diary. If you've noticed something, write down that little note in the diary. You know, hey, this is what happened today. And, you know, wow, you know, this happened last Tuesday also. Could there be something going on? So now you've got a definite need to go to the vet. But you're going to your regular veterinarian. If you have a good veterinarian whom you trust, not just one who gives vaccinations, but whom other people say, wow, you know, I brought my dog in or my cat in. They were amazing. They figured it out. That's what you want, okay? You can have anybody giving vaccinations or installing a microchip. That's easy stuff. You know, a 15-year-old vet tech can do that. But it's also a really great idea to have a baseline on all of your work. For instance, let's say blood work. Have a basic, what they call a junior panel. It's basically a panel that shows what your blood chemistry is for that pet. And those things are super, super handy when you have something like, you know, what's happened with this young lady. If she had not had anything like that, she wouldn't have known that there was a problem at all with her pet. But as it turned out, she did have that. And so that was very helpful. So we were able to compare it. Now, the other thing that, and I'm going to go into this one in a few minutes. The other thing is that you don't always have to rush to the place that's closest to you. Very often you're near a doctor who's not a great doctor. You know, like veterinarians and doctors, you know, and lawyers and accountants and mechanics, you might go a little farther. If you have a critical life-threatening emergency where your pet is seizing or your pet is bleeding, you know, and there's a lot of stuff going on, yeah, just use your common sense. Get wherever you can get quickly because some help is better than no help at all. But if you know your dog or your cat or your pet is just not right, that's where it might pay to go an hour to an emergency vet. It might pay to go 2 hours to a great one. I'm an hour and a half away from where I go, where I'm the behaviorist. I go there because unless I think there was one time I couldn't make it there because I had a pet that we were babysitting for that the family didn't know, but the dog came and it had either hemangiosarcoma or something going on, and it had a ruptured, when they dropped it off, it had a ruptured spleen. And I looked at the dog and I said, this dog is not right. And we rushed over and the dog wound up having to be euthanized. It had cancer in its spleen. The spleen ruptured. I looked at it not knowing the dog at all. And I told the owners, get over there, get to the ER. They were not able to save the dog, but the owners didn't notice that there was a problem for all this time. I get the dog, I look at it, I said, the dog has a pendulous abdomen and it's painful. There's something wrong. I'm not babysitting this dog for 2 weeks because dog isn't going to be alive when you come back. This dog's not going to be alive tomorrow. I didn't quite say that, but that's what I was thinking. And I did tell them, you got to get that dog, take him right over. And, so there are things like that where people just don't notice something. But most of you are those people who want to know why. You want to know how to save your dog's life, how to save your cat's life. how to save your pet's life in an emergency. So have a list and have, you know, when the vets are open, who they are, get a good rapport with your veterinary clinic, your local one, because they may not have an appointment. Every vet clinic I've ever worked with, my first question is, what happens if I have an emergency or if I need something kind of quickly? And they say, oh, we'll fit you in, we'll squeeze you in. Those are the ones you want to go to, not the ones, well, you know, we don't have anything available till, you know, November 15th, and here you're sitting in the beginning of September. So you have to have somebody, you know, have a vet hospital that wants to work with you and that wants to be, you know, kind of that primary care. You want to make sure that whoever it is cares about your pet and cares about that pet and making sure that that pet is, you know, going to be properly taken care of. So anyway, we get to the phone call, and if they say, oh, well, do you have an emergency now? Well, no, I don't, but what happens if I do or if I'm going away? The other next thing I want to just go through before I continue is make sure you have something in writing that you leave with whomever is babysitting your pet, whether it's your 14-year-old neighbor or it's a professional pet sitter who's been doing this for 20 years and knows a little bit about pets. Make sure that you are the one that makes a note or writes up something that in case of an emergency, you authorize this person to authorize medical treatment for your pet. You would be surprised how often a vet hospital will say, well, I need to talk to the owner. Because if they give out any kind of medication, if they work with the dog or the cat, and it winds up costing $5,000, and your pet professional or your neighbor kid who's taking care of your pets doesn't have that money or doesn't have a note, a lot of vet hospitals will not treat because you're not the owner. And if you are on an airplane somewhere and your pet needs help, you better have somebody have a piece of paper that says the date, the person who you, or people, which is better, that you authorize to, you know, secure that information. And the most important thing is the name of the insurance company, the pet insurance company that you use, so that the facility knows that they're not going to get beaten out of money, that if they do do something, they're going to get paid. And that's where for me, it's very important that the insurance company knows that I'm, you know, authorizing it, that there's a piece of paper authorizing it, and that the pet health provider, the veterinary clinic or emergency hospital, knows that they're going to get paid. You know, I hear it all the time. Well, you know, why are vets so expensive? It's because when you go to a doctor, it's covered by insurance. If you saw what your bill would be from your visit to your doctor with some basic blood work, and it's $1,000, and you go, but why is it so expensive? Why are they charging me $1,000 for a vet? Guess what? All the diagnostics are pretty much the same cost for a pet or for a human. The difference is that your pet doesn't have insurance. You do. So don't yell at the vet hospitals. Get yourself pet insurance, and then you don't have to complain and whine about, like, oh, why is this so expensive? And remember also, you have to help your pet provider to make sure that you are bringing that pet before it's too late. Okay? Go back to the story we were talking about at the top of the hour, the young lady with the service dog. I told her where to go. I said, you know what? This has been going on for 2 weeks. The dog isn't critical. The dog is not gasping for breath. The dog is not bleeding out. The dog is not vomiting. Obviously, if something were happening and it were really urgent, we would have gone to a local vet hospital, even if they weren't that great. But she had the time to go. So she went to an emergency vet who said, well, we can't do any tests till the morning when we have our person who's traveling comes in and does the scans or the ultrasound. If they felt that this dog could go back home and was going to be fine overnight, then she had time to drive up to the best vet hospital in the country, possibly in the world. And that's where she went. Now, she gets there. I had called up and let them know that she was on her way. She got the royal treatment, which pretty much everybody gets anyway, but it's got an extra royal treatment. And I'm not talking about the dysfunctional British royal treatment. I'm talking about the what you should get when you're working with a facility that has, you know, great care and great service. It should always be that. So we'll talk a little bit about what they said. So she shows up and asks them, you know, what's going on. They take the dog right back, performed all the diagnostics, found out that there was some kind of foreign body, so they did a radiograph. And the radiograph is the first line, right? You want to see, is there something there? The young lady sent me the copy of the radiograph. I looked at it, and I said, yep, you got something there. I know what radiographs look like. I've looked at more of them than most people could ever imagine. And I said, yep, there's stuff in there. I can't see the whole area, but I can see the top half, and there's definitely some material in there. What did they suggest? The dog needs surgery. Well, guess what? The other place, without having any diagnostics, told her the dog was going to need surgery without knowing anything. That's scary, too, because I don't want somebody to say, well, let's do an exploratory surgery because we have no idea. Surgery should be your last option, not your first option. So she opted to get the ultrasound, which showed that there was foreign material all throughout the digestive tract, so it wasn't just one location. So rather than having an uncertain outcome where she had some local vet, and nothing wrong with your local vet, but this was a vet she hadn't gone to prior. She had no knowledge of anything other than their vet hospital. They did not have a board-certified surgeon. They did not have board-certified internal medicine or anything else. They didn't have a CAT scan. They didn't have an MRI. They didn't have the top surgeon in minimally invasive surgery for pets. But guess what? Where I sent her, because she had the time to go up there, where I sent her, they did have that. Dog came back the next day after surgery. Dog is doing great this morning. I heard from her already. And it's a great outcome. And this is this young lady's service dog. So just imagine for a minute if she hadn't had that outcome, if she had had somebody who was just going to do an exploratory surgery and didn't have all the diagnostics, we'd be in a different position right now. That's all I'm saying. You need to have a plan before you have an emergency. If something happens to you and your spouse, is there somebody like, hey, we're just going to let them be wards of the state? Or do you have documents or some sort of paperwork saying, if something happens to my husband and me or my wife and me or whatever, then this is the person or people, these are the people who will take care of my children, that will administer my, you know, last will and testament. They will be executors. We prepare ourselves, most of us, when we have children, but why don't we do that when we have pets? You know how many pets end up in terrible, and I mean terrible, situations because people just didn't think of it. So if you don't have something written down, you know, whoever gets the money for your estate, they don't have to take care of your pets. But you know what? If you put it into your, like as even as a codicil, or put it into your will, that when you pass, that your pets will be cared for by this person. And if this person is unable to, then this person. And talk to the people. It could be a neighbor. It could be a child, or it could be a parent or a cousin. Somebody who knows that if something happens to you, that they're going to be taking care of that pet, and that they're not going to be giving the pet away. They're not going to be dumping it in a shelter. One of my relatives did when I was a kid, that was, the money was allocated to the pet. She took the money, took the pet, and then a couple days later dumped the pet into a shelter, an animal shelter. This was years and years and years ago. That's really creepy. It really is. It just shows what kind of horrible person this person was. But you know what? Meanwhile, the dog should have been with me, or with my parents, or with somebody who loved it. And to this day, we have no idea what happened to the pet. And it's really a shame. So Have a preparation. Have a little plan for yourselves. Know what you're going to be doing, not just for veterinary care like we're talking about, but also for what's going to happen if something happens to you. You know where your kids are going to go, hopefully, right? Well, you need to know what's going to happen to your pets. And especially if, even if you have things like birds, like macaws, things, you know, some of these birds can live, you know, 80 or 100 years. If you have a dog, even if it's, you know, a 10-year-old dog, I've had dogs that have lasted to 19 years of age. So, you know, prepare for that. And that's something very, very important. So today is really about preparation. Get yourself some knowledge. And if you don't have that knowledge, have somebody who you know, not just somebody you go on, you know, social media and say like, hey, my dog's bleeding out its rectum. What should I do? Well, geez, maybe, genius, you should figure out to have a vet and go to a vet, because if anybody gives you vet advice online and gives you advice without requiring that they personally meet this animal, then they're obviously not licensed. And if they're a retired vet tech, a licensed vet tech or a veterinarian, they should know better than to do that, because it is illegal, and that's practicing medicine without a license. What I'm doing with you is giving you good guidance of how to find proper pet care, how to find that great veterinarian who can give you that information. So if you tell somebody, hey, you know, I'm going to, you know, check out to see where there's a veterinarian who, you know, near me, who's, you know, a really good diagnostician, that's great. And they can tell you, well, when my dog had this, or, you know, if your dog has pain in its abdomen and is vomiting and has diarrhea, you know, you should go to a vet. That's what I'm telling you. I'm telling you to start being more aware of what you need to do with your pets so that you don't think, oh, you know, it's okay. For instance, I had a phone call, and this one stands out in my mind. Somebody called me. It was literally close to 3 a.m. in New Jersey. And meanwhile, they were out in California. Now, it happened to be someone, because I travel a lot with my animal behavior and working with things, lectures and all. So it's not unusual for me to get a phone call from Ireland or from Australia or New Zealand or Turkey, or anywhere in this country for somebody who has a question. And I will answer the phone. If I hear that phone, I will absolutely answer it. So it's not unusual for me to get a phone call like that, but for some reason, this one was just a strange kind of night. It was a full moon. It was just a weird night. Weather was changing, and I got a phone call, and I happened to answer it. And on the other end of the phone is a very nice young lady who said, you know, I was going to call the vet, but I didn't want to spend money on the poison control helpline. Can you help me? Well, right away, I'm getting nervous because I'm not a licensed veterinarian. I know a massive amount about massive amounts of things, but I'm not a vet and I'm not a licensed vet. So I'm not going to give you guys medical advice. But again, I can help you to know if you should be taking care of this, what you should be doing. She said, you know, it just happened about 15 minutes ago. My dog got into my purse. Well, women and purses. So did the dog get into something, you know, like a tampon, that it ate a tampon for whatever reason? Did it eat a chocolate bar? Did it eat a bottle of Tylenol or birth control pills? So now first thing I said was, what did your dog eat, or what do you think your dog ate? She said, I'm not sure because I found a crushed up bottle of Tylenol. Well, as we all know, Tylenol will kill your dog. It turned out the dog had eaten 13 Tylenols. Now, one would probably be enough to get him pretty sick because it was a small to mid-sized dog, you know, like 15-pound dog. I said to her, I said, do you have anybody, you know, a vet really close to you? She said, not really. I said, well, you can look online. You can check with a vet, but you need to do something now. And what she did, what she opted to do with a lot of different options she had, was to give the dog hydrogen peroxide. And again, don't just do it. Figure out what you're supposed to do, because if it doesn't work, it can cause problems as well. But thankfully, the dog vomited up 13 Tylenol capsules. They were partially dissolved already. So even that, knowing that if you have capsules that you're using that are going to be more easily absorbed into the bloodstream, you might want to use a tablet, which maybe takes a little longer to break down, to keep if you have a dog who likes to go into your purse. Second thing is, why is your purse down where the dog could get it? Put your purse up in the top of the cabinet. Put it, you know, what a great place that people laugh at me, but they'll say, oh, I don't use a crate for my dog anymore. You know what the best place to hide your stuff that has stuff in it? Your dog's old crate. So if you have a crate that your dog doesn't fit in anymore, put your crate in the corner of the room, and you can even put your dog's current crate underneath it. Put your dog's old crate, if it's smaller, I'm assuming, on top of that. Put your purse in there. Of course, keep it clean. Put your purse in there. Put your any medications, anything that you feel the dog could get into, because now he's got to go through a crate to try to get at anything, right? So that's very handy. So use, and they even make really nice crates now that look like pieces of furniture. But it's great because it's easy access for you and it's safe for your pet. So think about it. So now what I want to do is I want to kind of backtrack a little bit, and I want to talk about how you can best take care of your pets when something does happen to you. And what do you do? And this is not going to be, you know, taking a long time, but it is important for you to remember that when you have your dog, your cat, make sure that you have a contingency plan, even in case of fire, in case there's power outage. Make sure you give your friends a call. Say, hey, and don't just pick your next-door neighbor, because what the next part of its current events, there was someone who had a fire in their house. She had two of her own dogs, and the mom's house had the fire. The girl had three dogs that she just found on the street, which, you know, thank you for having a big heart, but, you know, you need to have a brain that's at least half the size of your heart. Three dogs she knew nothing about. They seemed fine. We'll leave the breeds out of it because it really doesn't matter, but there were three of them. Now, when you have two of something, they tend to pair up, whether it's a fight or they tend to pair up to be buddies. And when you get that third one, all of a sudden the third one and the second one will play and the first one has a different role. Well, that's exactly what happened. So this young lady and her mom wound up being together because of the house fire. The young lady had these three dogs. The mom had her two dogs. And lo and behold, the three dogs went after the two dogs who were very well behaved, the mom's dogs. And then the three dogs basically tried to kill her dogs. The one dog just stood there in panic. The other one took off, so was kind of just a little bit of injured. And then once the mom and the daughter broke the fight up, the daughter had to go to the emergency room. So she now was bleeding all over, had, I don't know, I think it was upward of about 60 stitches because she had her arms and her one leg got pretty badly bitten up. And, you know, you leave bites open, a wound draining. So you can imagine how many probably could have been done if they'd been micro sutures. So, you know, here we are. We're like, the girl's got a problem. They don't know which vet to go to. They just had this big fire. They don't have a place to go. That was just basically a place and a problem waiting to happen. If the girl instead, you know, doing this and had these dogs there, had the dogs, had crates for them, so that if there is a problem, the dogs are safe. You could go inside, put yourself into a crate one day and see. I'm not telling you to do this. I'm just saying. Or you have, you know, a special needs child who locks their sister into a crate. You can go on those wire crates, and you could just put your feet on the door, and you can literally push it open. You could probably do that on the sides of the crate. They're not that secure. If you have a dog or a pet that is kind of an unknown quantity, you better have something a little more solid than that. Even the ones that are the airline crates, Dogs can figure out, and I have these brilliant Ridgebacks, and most of mine are service dogs. They are so smart. They can get out of those crates in 2 minutes flat. So you really got to look at it as, if you're going to be taking in stray dogs and you're going to try to keep them safe, you better, you know, really know your stuff and make sure that they are going to be safe and sound in that kind of situation. So, for instance, in the case of, you know, this one where I was telling you about the lady, so these dogs could have wound up very easily, instead of being okay, they could have ended up having a problem where, let's say they, well, now they've got a bite history. What rescuer shelter is going to want dogs that are have a bite history? And maybe the rescuer shelter will tell you that, oh, yeah, no, we'll make sure we get them adopted out. Well, now the dog can't be adopted out because it's got a bite history. They're not going to tell people, oh, yeah, this is going to be great with family dogs. You are doing something that comes from a good place. But use your brain, not just your heart, okay? If you want to rescue dogs, get yourself good, solid, heavy-duty crates. They have these really nice ones, actually, that they look like they could contain a Bengal tiger. I have them just because they're very solid when you're driving. And if you're transporting, and we have a motor coach, and when we're transporting dogs, whether they're rescues or our service dogs, we have these things literally hardwired into the back of the toy hauler, and these things are not going anywhere. And if, God forbid, there's an accident, these dogs are going to be in very solid cages, very large, but very solid. So I know my pets will be okay. But people, you know, don't think like that. And I don't understand why, because you prepare stuff for your kids. You don't prepare stuff for your pets. And why wouldn't you prepare for your pets? Because they can't prepare for themselves, right? They can't do things. You have to do the things for them. So when we're talking about something like that, if this young lady and her mom had a contingency plan, not just one, because it certainly looks like they did have a contingency plan, going to bring them to mom's, at least put them in a separate room. Give them an option, an opportunity where they're not just going to be kind of stuck, and, you know, where they have the opportunity to, to do well and to be safe, because it's not fair to any of them. So it's not just the dogs who now had, you know, bitten or attacked and tried to kill the other dogs. What do you do with those poor animals, the ones that got attacked? That dog isn't going to, you know, really trust other pets potentially. So now you've got a dog who's afraid of other dogs, and you've got dogs who have tried to kill other dogs. So makes sense always to prepare and have more than one contingency plan. Once you have a contingency plan, you know, then you can move on to a different place. But when you are, you know, having, you know, plan A doesn't work, you better have a plan B, a C, a D, and an E, because animals and kids, you know, don't always do what we wish they would do, right? They definitely don't do what we would hope they would do in every situation. All right, so enough of that for now. So now we've got this beautiful weather we're starting in. We have our beautiful fall weather. We have this great, really nice opportunity, the end of the summer here, to take our pets out. And, you know, at night it's a little bit cooler. And what I'm starting to see already is people who don't realize that even though, you know, it gets cooler, it can still heat up really quickly inside a car. Yeah, it's not just in the summer when, you know, you get into the car and it's hot. Make sure, and again, I'm going to give you something that you can work on. They have these really cool things. It's like a temperature gauge. I've had these things for years. But they have like a little temperature gauge, and it works off of your cell phone, and it can actually tell you exactly what the temperature is, if there's any problem or issue with that. And it will also let you know with an alarm. It can hit your email. It can hit your text messages. It can be a pager. It can go to anything. And that's an important part of this, is making sure that, again, prepare. You know, some people just don't like to prepare. They're very spontaneous. You know, I'm very spontaneous, and, you know, I'll fly to Boston to go get some Boston clam chowder, but I'm going to make sure that all of my pets are well prepared, that my dogs have somebody who's going to take care of them. I have my pets all in a will, and then sometimes I'll just have like a codicil where it's kind of an after the fact. So like you put in your will whom you want to take care of your dogs or your pets. And then if those pets change, or if you want one for one person, one to another, or if the contingency, have it all written down, have that all listed. Again, that's the most important part of it, is making sure, check with people. Don't just say, oh, I'm going to give my dogs to my son-in-law, because your son-in-law may not want your dog now. So make sure you check it out with everybody. And also, make sure you're very aware of, you know, your pet's medical records, just like you would have your child's vaccination records. Make sure you have all the veterinary records available and keep them current. You may never need them, but it's really handy. And instead of just having your pet's medical records, you know, on a thumb drive or something, it's so handy. Take your medical records, your own as well, and your kids as well, and email them to yourself. Email, because if you, and make sure that the attachments can be opened, because this way, or have a Google Drive, have something where even if, like, let's say, God forbid, like with this family, the house burned down. So everything she had in her computer, all that's gone. It pays to have it on the cloud, but it really pays to have it on email, because you can go anywhere. You can even do your phone. If you lose your phone, you can always have another phone. You can go on there and you can have access to all your veterinary and medical records. It's really, you know, at this day and age, it's just a necessity. You know, you've just really got to look at things and be prepared. It's not a sign of you being neurotic or phobic, as I hear that with people. They say, oh, you know, I want to do that, but my husband says, oh, you know, nothing's going to happen to us. Guess what? People die every day because they didn't want to bother thinking about it. They didn't go for testing. They didn't check it out. And listen, even if you do check your health out, people die every day, right? You can be in an accident. Something can happen that you don't expect. I don't think too many people really think about what's going to happen to them when they're gone. And even, you know, if you have, whether it's children, you have pets, you have belongings, or what would happen if somebody couldn't reach you? You're stranded in a foreign country. You can't get back. Just have a contingency plan. Have something planned so that at least you have somebody there who can take care of things. Somebody there who knows, and more importantly, somebody there who can do something in an emergency to help out that situation. So we only have a few minutes left, and because you're being lectured quite a bit, I'm going to tell you a couple of other quick stories I'm going to put out on our TV show in the next few weeks, but I'm going to kind of give you a preview. All right. Some great things to think of is make sure you have a preparedness plan like we've been talking about. Make sure you have all your ducks in a row, your puppies in a row. Make sure you know what's going to happen in case the unplanned happens, and check with those people. Now, what can you do beside that on a more emergent basis? I hope everybody there has a first aid kit for their, you know, for their family, for their kids, for their human family. You can also have a great little emergency kit for your dog. You might put hydrogen peroxide. There's some great stuff, clotting things and clotting gauze, that if the dog or pet gets, you know, like let's say cuts its leg, there are actually things like Bleed Stop and Rapid Seal. There's some great products out there that are for pets and for, you know, humans as well. And get a couple of tubes of that, not just because, you know, listen, if you cut your dog's toenail too short and it's bleeding, it looks terrible. But, you know, chances are your dog's going to be fine till you can get the dog there. But they have all kinds of really cool things. Go on to, you know, either online, do some research. In my first aid kit, I have Bleed Stop, which you can literally take a packet of that and jam it and just pour it into a wound and put some pressure on it. and it will stop the bleeding. Trust me, I'm an expert on stopping bleeding on wounds, on people and on animals. Things like that are great. There are clotting gauze, so that you could actually get a roll of gauze. It looks kind of like if you were if you broke your arm or broke your leg, and your human doctor were going to wrap your leg or your arm with gauze to put a cast on. They have clotting medication in the gauze, so the gauze, you actually wrap it and it stops the bleeding. There are other things that are handy for you to have is vet wrap or Coflex, which is an elastic self-stick. So in other words, it sticks to itself. The big thing with that is just make sure you don't make it too tight, because if you don't know how to wrap, which is another thing you should learn how to do, and we're going to be talking about that in the future on our TV show, learn how to wrap that. Wrap a stuffed animal's leg and just practice those kind of things so you know what to do. Another thing that is definitely handy is to have a pair of sharp scissors so that if you need to cut something, if your animal, I have wire snippers, or the other thing you can do is have toenail clippers are really handy to cut things. What do you do if your dog is tangled up in wire or tangled up, like we have in horses sometimes where there's barbed wire and a horse steps through a barbed wire, which is why you never use barbed wire around animals or children. Husbands, maybe. No, I'm just kidding. But anyway, so you should have wire snippers. I know people look at me like I'm crazy, like, why do you need wire snippers? Because if your dog gets caught, and I've had this happen with people who keep metal choker chains or even, regular chokers, like fabric ones, on their dog. And the one dog, and I've probably seen this 2 or 3 dozen times, where the dogs are playing, the one dog gets its bottom jaw or its top jaw, it's usually the bottom, stuck in that. The other dog spins around once or twice, and now that dog is stuck with this metal chain, and they're trying to get out of it, and both dogs are freaking out. Boy, wire snippers and that would be so handy. Just snip that and save both of those dogs. So there are things like that that, you don't really think of. Put together, depending on where you live, depending on, what kind of animals you have and what kind of situation, put things like that together. Have a preparedness kit so that instead of you just, wanting to say, I have gauze. Well, gauze is great, but if the dogs are stuck because they've got, this wire embedded between them, that, gauze isn't going to really do a whole lot. The other part of that is to have a plan. If you do have a dog or dogs who might be a bit reactive, learn some techniques to separate dogs. You don't have to be a behaviorist to figure this stuff out. Have yourself in a place that's easy to access. Have a pair of, heavy gloves so that if you have to break up a dog fight, if the dogs are already attached and they're stuck together and chewing on each other and they're not re-grasping, you have 5 seconds to go grab those gloves, put them on so that when you're trying to separate them, you're not in the middle of it losing a finger or getting ripped up. And now the animal control is going to get really involved and the health department, because now the dog's bitten a human, not just another dog. Get yourself a plan. Get yourself prepared for all these things before something happens. The best way to prepare for the inevitable is to prepare for what isn't going to happen. Because if you prepare for what isn't going to happen, at least you have some kind of preparedness plan. If there's your power goes out in the middle of the winter, if you don't have a generator, have a contingency plan. And that shouldn't include anything that's a fire hazard. But there are definitely things that you can do to be prepared before anything happens. So unfortunately, we are out of time for today. Anybody who wants to reach out, you can email us, and we're happy to answer you. You can reach out to us at PAW, P-A-W, Behavioral, B-E-H-A-V-I-O-R-A-L, PAW Behavioral, @gmail.com. And you can email with your questions, with your comments. If you love it, you hate it, whatever. We want to hear all of it. Please do give us a week or two to get back to you, because sometimes we do have too many questions and it's very hard. We do try to get in touch with everybody as much as possible. Comments, questions, you love it, you hate it, let us know, because we want you to be entertained and informed. And for now, have a wonderful, healthy, happy weekend. Be smart, be safe, and God bless.